Live Creative Now, episode 86.
Welcome to Live Creative Now with Melissa Dinwiddie, a weekly podcast to inspire you to create your art and share your work, because that's how you will change the world.
Hello, hello, hello. I am Melissa Dinwiddie, passion pluralite artist, happiness catalyst, and creativity instigator, and author of The Creative Sandbox Way, here to address all your questions about living a full color creative life. Whether you think of yourself as non-artistic, not creative, which is a lie, or you think of yourself as an artist of any kind or anything in between, no matter how you define yourself, feeding your creative hungers makes you feel more alive, and it's how you change the world. Today, I am pulling out of the archives, that have not been published yet, an interview that I did way back in August of 2015. Oh my gosh, so long ago. An interview that I did with Päivi Eerola from Finland, a full-time artist who helps people to loosen up without losing their focus, that I've never shared because here's the thing. When I started this podcast, I thought, hey, you know, wouldn't it be fun to do interviews? I'll do interviews maybe once or twice a month, and I'll do monologue podcasts, you know, three times a month, two or three times a month. And what I discovered is that it is so much easier for me to get a monologue podcast out than to get an interview podcast out, because I have this pressure on myself to write up all these notes about the interview podcasts and to edit them. And they take so much longer to get out there. And so the poor people that I've interviewed have been waiting and waiting and waiting to hear their interviews published, and they have not been published. So poor Päivi has been waiting for this interview to be live. And that is the reality of why it has not been live, because I have not managed to get it edited. So here it is in gloriously imperfectly edited state. Päivi is an utterly delightful creative person. She is such a kindred spirit. Her website is peonyandparakeet.com. I highly recommend you check it out. She comes from the left and right brain together. She's a left brain person and a right brain person combined in one. She has a beautiful ability to combine the intuitive and innovative and the quote unquote left side of the brain all together. Have a listen to our conversation. I hope you enjoy it. By the way, her little motto, tagline at the top of her website is to create in full color with full self-expression. So clearly you can see that she is a true kindred spirit. I hope you enjoy this conversation with Päivi Eerola. I hope I haven't mangled her last name too badly. Enjoy. First of all, tell me about, you have this website, peonyandparakeet.com, and you look like you do really similar things to me. You're a creative person, you're an artist yourself, and you look like you are really enthusiastic about getting other people in touch with their own creative side. Mm. So tell me about what it is that you do in your own words. And how did you come to be doing it?
Yeah, well, I think I could call myself a designer who teaches art. My background is in design, but currently I teach art. And I have my own classes, and then I also teach for others. And I also create custom artwork and designs. Most of my business happens online, and most of my customers are located outside my country. Most of them are from USA or Australia or Canada. And I have very few Finnish clients or very few European clients even. So I teach art in English, which is not my native language. I have a designer background, but also I'm a master of science in computer science. So I have this kind of two-folded background.
That is quite unusual to find an artist who also has a master's in computer science. So tell me about how that came about.
Yeah, well, you know, when I was a child, I was really into art, making art and writing. I've always been an avid writer. But I also did like numbers. And, you know, when you're a child and people say that you're talented in something, like in drawing, in my case, they might have a clear understanding of your passion. But still, I think that the answer is not that obvious, that artists can't just create art, you know. They have to understand how to connect with people and how to build a business and such. So I think for many creative person, the right answer for the career is not what you hear from your parents or such. And I thought that being an artist would mean very little money. So I thought that computer science would be much more appropriate for me. And my teachers encouraged me to go to an area which is really male-dominated. I think some of my female teachers had some passion to drive women to fields that have a lot of men. And I thought that when IT business had a lot of men, it would also bring me some money, unlike art. So my first degree was computer science, and I had quite a long career in IT business. I sold IT projects and I managed them, and I also developed an e-learning system very many years ago and such. So, but when I did that, I kind of started feeling a bit, not a bit depressed, but I felt that I couldn't fully express myself in my work. And then I challenged myself to find another field I could study. And then I remembered that when I was a child, I saw this profession which was called industrial designer, and I thought that that was really great. I thought that I didn't know what it was, but I somehow thought that that was really great and would be something to do with product development, which is actually what engineering is a lot about. So when I was something like 40 years old, I went to study industrial design. It was some years ago, and then I regretted that I had wasted all my years managing and selling IT projects, and I had some sort of a crisis back then. But I think that the biggest change happened a few years later after I graduated, when I realized that if I accept what I have learned during those years, that can help me build art business even more than my degree in design. So actually, my first degree and what I did at that job had actually a big role in what I do at the moment, even if it sounds very odd.
So your computer science degree was more helpful for you in doing what you're doing now than your design degree, is that right?
Yeah, I think that few factors are there. Like, for example, my relationship to money was very different than if I had been an artist from the beginning, because I was used to selling, you know, big IT projects. So my relationship to money was different. And then another thing was that I probably was more organized and more logical than I would have been without the degree that included a lot of logical thinking. And also that I was able to understand people who think logically, because many people who are very logical still want to create art. And I think that there's a lot of people who need help with that. They want to feel liberated, but they also want to be analytical. And that helped. And also, in my career in IT business, I was a coach and a trainer at some point. And that was a big thing for me to learn how to teach people. And, you know, that's a basic skill that doesn't change whatever you teach. You can teach anything when you have the basic skills. So all in all, I think that for everybody who thinks about building your dream job, I think the secret is to combine all the skills and passions and that you already have, and then accept that you have to learn a lot more on top of that.
Oh my God, isn't that the truth? Well, one of the things that you write on your website that I really, really like is you say, and this is a quote, "Whatever you teach or whatever you want to learn, it is always a marriage of left and right brain." And I love that so much because, you know, ever since this, like, there's the book Drawing on the Right Side of the Brain, and there's the right brain business plan, and this whole right brain, left brain metaphor is so powerful in our culture. And it's been disproven that, you know, there is nothing that, you know, we're not either right brain people or left brain people. Everything we do combines both, but still the metaphor is a very, very useful and powerful metaphor. I would love to hear your story behind that insight that whatever you teach or whatever you want to learn is always a marriage of left and right brain. What's the story there?
Yeah, in the beginning of my IT career, I was a trainer, as I mentioned, and I was teaching IT professionals to program data systems. And when I started, I thought that if I tell people in one sentence what's the idea of it is, then they just remember that and do it that way. But actually teaching and learning is much more complicated. And I remember one particular point when I had a group of old men and I was a young woman in front of this group of old men, and I was supposed to teach them how to program new kind of data system. It was a new method, new language they had to learn, new programming language. they had to learn. And it was very different from what they had done for tens of years or 10 years. And I realized that now I have to use all my logical skills to explain these engineering-minded people logically how they can understand this new language and the new principles that are built in that. But then I also realized that they had to abandon old principles and old values that they had. That it wasn't just, learning the new skill and go on, because philosophically it was a very different way to build systems. So then I realized that to communicate all that change, that was something that I had to use my right brain to. Maybe not talk so straight about that, but I also had to show some way that I understand that it will feel difficult at first. Another thing is that, which goes another way around, that I think that many creative people are idea people, and I consider myself as idea people, and I come up new ideas really easily. So, but the actual ideas don't take you very far. If you care about the quality of your work, you have to learn how to pick the best ideas, and you have to find persistence to make them true, and the skills also to make them true. And in engineering, these kind of values, like testing ideas, can they be implemented? That's a very high-valued skill. And actually, in engineering, new ideas are invented by thinking logically, not creatively. So I think that many times when creative people say that they have too strong inner critic, or like me, I often call my inner critic my inner engineer. I think that they don't realize that actually these inner critics are not only some kind of negative persons. They actually have great insights, even if they sound a bit sarcastic at first. So I think that if you can turn this kind of inner battle between your creative and logical sides to a more constructive conversation, you will become much more effective and skillful. And this is something that I've really, when I've searched peace of mind, I had to find a balance between my inner engineer and my inner artist. And many times you can express much more clearly and much more focused if you can combine the two, the innovative part and the analytical part.
Well, I'm wondering, do you have an example that you can share about? You were saying that your inner engineer might have really useful things to say to you. Do you have examples that you can share of that in your own life?
One thing is that when I create art, even if that's a really creative process, my inner engineer might say that, for example, question that what I want to express, and then my creativity may answer that I want to express the happiness in a warm summer morning. And then my inner engineer might ask that what does that actually is? That question all the little details that my creativity side actually misses. And many times when we think about big ideas, we kind of neglect a lot of practical little details that are needed to accomplish them, that are needed to communicate them clearly. And that way, the inner engineer can really participate in the process of creating art.
I love that. I like that reframe of being able to see that inner engineer, that inner critic, as not just a negative voice, but as a voice that can actually help you to effectively create something that you want to create.
Yeah. I often take breaks when I create art, and I let my inner engineer talk then. So I kind of take turns with my inner engineer and my inner artist.
So tell me what that would look like. Give me a sense of that particular conversation. You've been making your art, and you're taking a break to let your inner engineer say something. What happens?
Yeah, I leave my painting on the table so that I can walk by it. But I usually do something very different. I usually organize something. That's one way to get my inner engineer going. So I think about the painting, but I don't think about the particular parts of the painting as such. I think more about a concept or try to find the details behind the emotions that I feel. I think it's some kind of process of grounding yourself, you know, that you get grounded. And my art is pretty detailed, and I enjoy details. So I want to get the details right.
And it sounds like letting yourself take that space and listen to that inner engineer is helpful in being able to ground and get those details right.
Yeah. And many times the inspiration is in the details. It's not so much in the big picture. And I think that's one problem for many people, that they get this big grand idea, and when they start creating, it's actually pretty empty. And many times the inspiration comes in small pieces, and many times it's in the details. Like, you know, when they say that life is in small moments, I feel that with creativity, the inspiration is also comes in small pieces.
Yeah, I have the same experience. And I think about, like, for me, I'm the same way. The details are where I find so much delight. It just, like, I get so delighted thinking, doing things like paying attention to, for example, maybe the back of the painting, or a hidden place, the sides of my canvas that many artists would only paint black or leave because it's going to be under a frame or something. And I just take so much delight in adding something special there that maybe not everybody will notice, but those people who take the time to look in that spot, you know, open the little door or turn the piece upside down or whatever, they'll find a little treasure, a little sort of reward for their attention, you know, for their effort.
Yeah, I understand that fully, because when I create art, I try to create my artwork so that wherever you look at, you will find something to look at, or you will find a sort of arrow or sort of way to a little treasure which you can look at. So I think we share the love for the
a love of details. Something else that you write on your about page, I think it is you say there's a defined process where creative thinking can be combined with logical thinking. What is that defined process?
Oh, that defined process is called design process. And it was taught to me when I was studying industrial design. And it's a process where you which starts with background study, which contains a lot of logical thinking. So if you create a design, whether it's a designed service or designed like a designed item, the process that designers use starts with background design, background study, and then you start creating ideas. And usually, the common thing to say is that you don't try to find one idea or five ideas. You try to find tens and hundred, even hundred of ideas. And then when you've sketched or listed those, then you move on and start narrowing and combining the all the ideas. And that's a logical process. So, and that phase is repeated several times.
And so can I ask about the background study? Sorry to interrupt, but the background study, can you tell a little bit more about what that might look like? What is that background study part?
Yeah. Well, background study usually starts by setting design drivers, which are sort of basic requirements for the design, which can be like materials that you use, basic restrictions that you have to stay inside those restrictions. And well, we all know that when you have been connected with your creativity, we all know that restrictions usually cause much more creativity than less.
Yes, absolutely. So this might be something, for example, like if you're working with a client, they might have a budget, right? They have a financial limitation that you'd have to stay inside, or they have certain colors that you have to use if you're doing something because they're brand colors or something like that. Those kinds of parameters.
Main parameters. Mm-hmm. And then you also study the client that you work, that you will be designing for. And do some kind of customer profiling, and also
what would that look like? The customer profiling.
Usually, you can sort of create customer prototypes and describe their typical day and that kind of stuff. Draw their faces to be able to really play with the characters, think about what they like. And background study can also and often contain some kind of field study where you ask questions of real people, not only play with the prototypes. For me, I use this kind of process for many of my products, and I often start a background study by spending a day at the library. That's my favorite thing. I love libraries, and I think that it's really good to spend one day without a computer examining all the possible subjects that might be connected with that product. And then I get all the customer feedback and such that I have gathered during the past months for the product and start. Lately, I've been writing by hand all the basic goals and basic descriptions of the products and such, because I feel that computer work in background study phase is not that productive as people usually feel. That many people do a lot of background study. I know many designers who do a lot of background study just browsing the internet. But I think that it's for me at least, it's not that useful, because I spend a lot of time on computer, and usually I've gathered quite a lot of information already because I have been interested in those subjects. So it's some kind of summary phase to get all the little facts and details that in right proportion.
But so you've got the background study phase, and then what was the next phase?
Was generating ideas.
Generating ideas, and you do dozens or hundreds of those, and then you start combining those?
Yeah.
And then you do more idea generation after that?
Yes. And narrowing ideas, really thinking about them analytically. And I usually try to take care of that the ideas have enough variation, that, you know, you don't have all the ideas that, for example, supplies, that you have supplies that you could use at the class, if I think about art classes and such. I try to figure out a lot of different kind of ideas, like, for example, what is the main plot of the class, and then the supplies, and what are the main problems that people experience. So I try to gather a lot of ideas. That actually comes from computer science, too. There are many systems have a sort of multi-tiered model, that they have a lot of layers. So I try to, I don't know if this is understandable for you, but I try to create ideas that are in different layers in that way, that I can combine them. I can use, for example, watercolors and colored pencils, and then take a certain kind of plot and certain kind of problems which I focus on, that they can be, you know, combined together.
And I'm curious, so this defined process, combining creative thinking with logical thinking, where do you use that in your life nowadays?
I use that in product development. So if I create a new class, for example, I use always that. I have adjusted that to my art making, the fact that we talked a while ago. So my background study in my art, when I create art, can be like that I go to play to places that raise a certain kind of emotions, and that kind of, you know, preparing for creating the artwork.
And Pavi, how did you get into teaching art? It sounds like you've been doing art ever since you were little. Let me ask you, did you ever have a period where you were not making art, or have you always just been an artist all the way through from when you were small?
Yes, I have had the period. It was when, after I had studied a couple of years, you know, in the technology, in the University of Technology, you know, it took me something like 7 years to graduate. It was really difficult and hard. And after a couple of years of practicing logical thinking, I sort of ran out of ideas, and I started creating crafts, because it was much closer to engineering. I had always enjoyed crafting. And I get back to it and stopped drawing And actually, I came to a point where I thought that I need more life experience to be able to express things, because, you know, painting and drawing just realistic photographic images has never been enough. And I had already got some technical skills, so that I really felt that I lack of having something to say. So I thought that I will get back to it at some time in my life. And then I got back to it after I had worked in IT business for some time. I really needed that outlet.
You know, something that you said, I want to ask you about, because this is an area that's really interesting to me. You said something like that photographically realistic drawing or painting wasn't enough for you. And, you know, that I think that's such an interesting, rich area to talk about, because for whatever reason, whenever people talk about creativity, it invariably, the person who says, oh, I'm not creative, the justification for saying that almost always is, I can't draw, or I can't draw a straight line, they'll often say. But what they really mean is, I can't draw something representationally so that you would recognize, you know, the thing that I'm trying to draw. And that is sort of the placeholder for so many people of creativity. And of course, that's absolutely absurd to think that the ability to draw something realistically is the marker for whether or not you're creative, because that's, you know, the ways to be creative as a human being are infinite, and that's one tiny, teeny little way. And you know, what struck me about what you said is that wasn't enough for you. You wrote something about that on your blog as well. You talk about when you were young, you lived very far from art galleries or art exhibitions. So you used to go to your library and browse the big art books that had paintings from famous artists. And that was like your private gallery for you. And you said that I don't know how old you were at this time, but that you especially admired the expressionists like Henri Matisse and Pablo Picasso, who at that time, the art that we, you know, tend to think of these artists, these expressionists, was not in this photographically realistic style. And you write that it made a big impact on you when you read that Picasso mastered the realistic painting techniques when he was a young boy. And that led you to a certain kind of conclusion. Can you talk about what that conclusion for you was?
Yeah. I thought that you know, I admired, and I still admire Pablo Picasso a lot. And I thought that that was just his first steps, those realistic things. On the other hand, after growing up, I realized that you know, the quality of self-expression and the amount of self-expression can't be measured by analyzing the style or the theme only. You know, you can see realistic-looking paintings that can be very expressive, and more loose paintings that are actually a lot less expressive, and vice versa. But for me, I think I've always searched some kind of bravery. How would I say that? I think it's somehow more brave to go beyond photographic images, and Yeah, that's something that has always made a big impact on me. It's when people are brave and they can, you know, they cross lines. And then my own experience is that you limit a lot of from art if it's only technical skills.
Yeah.
It's art is so much more than technical skills.
And, absolutely.
Yeah. And that's what I think that the problem with very visual people who don't practice drawing is that they are really, you know, they are really, they recognize that they are visual, and then they somehow think that when they lack of technical skills, they are not creative, which is absurd. But that's only the technical skills. And yeah. I divide the ability to draw in three areas. And one is developing the technical skills, but one is increasing your imagination. And I think that you can increase your imagination by having time for your thoughts, and that's very efficient way. So step out from the computer and shut the doors and be alone and walk alone in the nature and do that kind of stuff. I think that's a much more effective way to grow your imagination than, for example, watching movies. And having time that you feel bored, that's one really good way to increase your imagination. And the third thing is that you should effectively collect inspirational source material to fuel up your creativity. And I know that many people do that, and some people do only that. You know, they pin a lot off at Pinterest and they collect all kind of images. But I think that when you can collect all kind of source material, not only web-based stuff, and you can collect experiences and even poems and all kind of stuff that inspire you. So that's one thing. And for many, also problem is that when they collect the inspirational material, they don't have ways to use those. And all these three factors are something that I teach at my classes, especially at the class Inspirational Drawing, which is my flagship.
Tell me about that. Tell me about that class. What do you teach in Inspirational Drawing?
Yeah, I teach people draw, but not in the traditional way. I don't teach, you know, perspective or how to draw a person or how to draw a face or such. I teach people to start drawing and start adding things from art theories right into practice. And I also teach how to use inspirational material so that you can, you know, pick a photo and use it to in your drawing in a very unconventional way by picking different elements from that and continue with your own thoughts and ideas. So it's a very creative process which I've developed
because that sounds really
fun. It's so wrong that when you know, when you're a visual person, there's so much words in this world, and nobody says that I can't write, you know. Nobody says that I can't speak or I can't write if they don't do a perfect job. I think the same thing should be applied to drawing, because it's a way for visual people to process thoughts and really develop new ideas so that they can be also practical and so that those ideas will come true. When you see them on the paper, they are much more realistic than if you only think and pin and visualize in your mind.
Yeah. I'm so fascinated with this whole area, this topic of realistic drawing versus intuitive mark making or drawing or whatever, and how people perceive it. And I know that so many artists who don't have, haven't mastered the skill of photographically realistic drawing or painting feel less than because they don't have that particular skill to the same level as, you know, people who have achieved that level of mastery or whatever. And yet I've also talked to people who do have that skill. They just naturally have, you know, were born with an ability that they cultivated to see what's in front of them and translate that onto a piece of paper. And it was so interesting to me when I first talked to somebody who had that skill, who felt like they were not a real artist because they felt like all they were doing was being a technician.
Yeah, I have had a lot of those students too that can draw really well if you consider, realistic drawing, if you limit the skill as realistic drawing. And they really miss that imagination and inspiration part of the skill. And many of those people have been on my courses, which is really interesting that, it goes both ways.
Yeah. I think it's that there are so many ways for us to step into that comparison trap. You know, if whatever you feel like is a perceived lack in yourself, you're going to look at what other people are doing, or at least I am. I am notorious for stepping in the comparison trap. So this happens to me all the time. I'll see something else. Somebody has a skill that I'm weaker in that particular area, and I will judge myself negatively in that way. But I'm not necessarily thinking about the things that, you know, flow for me and come easily and naturally, or just this, you know, give me this sense of joy when I do them that other people might be looking at and thinking, wow, I'm not able to do what Melissa does. And they might be stepping in the comparison trap around that, right? So yeah. It's funny how we play that game with ourselves.
Yeah, yeah. I think that for me, one of the big thing was that when I accepted my background in engineering, I somehow became much more confident as an artist. And that is, I don't know why that happened, but it was something that I thought that I feared that if I acknowledge all the things, if I acknowledge what kind of engineer I am, I'm somehow less of an artist. But it happened the other way around. And sometimes I think that do people exclude things that they know from their art? And that's actually something that I want to examine further in the next months, that how could I help people to, you know, incorporate their many skills so that they can create more powerful, more expressive art that way. There can be lots of skills that we don't connect with our creativity and our artistic mindset, but, you know, there are so many different kind of art in the world, and there has to be, because I believe that all kind of art has its place in the world. And you just have to find out what's your approach to creating art and find the audience that really wants to see and connect with those images.
Yeah, it strikes me as you're talking that what you're really talking about is authenticity, is, you know, embracing who you are and what you bring to the table instead of either hiding it away or apologizing for it or something, really bringing it. I mean, that's, I love your story of your art got better when you embraced your engineering background rather than, you know, hiding it or being embarrassed by it. And I think that's true for all of us when we can bring our full selves, everything that we've got, everything that we've learned, everything that, you know, is in our background, when we can bring it with us, I think it does create, I think everything, I think it makes everything better.
Yeah. People are really intellectual. I feel that people are really intellectual. They really see if you're honest or not. And when you just you're honest yourself, you will find your audience. It doesn't always mean that. How would I say that? It's a bit difficult to say, but for some people, honesty might be something, you know, too much information or that kind of stuff. You know, they are being too straight. But I think that, like in art, when you have the style, there's something behind that style, and you have to be confident with all that. Whatever it is, you have to be confident with all that. If you only look at style and theme and that kind of stuff, it gets really superficial, and then you're on your way to comparing yourself with others.
Yeah, I had my best story around this is when I'd been doing calligraphy for, oh, maybe a year or something. And that was my big creative passion at the time. And I took a workshop and I was sitting next to somebody who was just doing the most beautiful work. I was so blown away by her work. And every time I would turn my head and look at what she was doing, what she was creating, I would think, oh my God, her work is so interesting and so beautiful. And it's so much better than mine. And I wish my work was like that rather than like this dreck that I felt like I was producing. And the second day of the workshop, everybody put their art on the floor so we could kind of see what people had been creating. And I remember standing there and I was standing there looking at this woman's work and thinking how interesting and cool and beautiful I thought it was, and just feeling so badly about myself because I liked her work so much better. And I just felt so incapable of creating something that I liked. And she turned to me and she said, Melissa, your work is so cool and interesting. I wish my work was like yours. Mine is so boring. And I was just, it flipped my lid. I mean, it was this huge, powerful moment for me. And it happened probably 20 years ago at this point. And I remember thinking, wow, it was this enormous paradigm shift that my work could be interesting to somebody else when I was seeing it as so crappy and so boring. And that statement from that woman allowed me to take off my hypercritical glasses and kind of put on her glasses and see my work through her eyes, which I think we need to do. You know, I think we need that experience of looking at our work intentionally through somebody else's eyes, which is what we do when we get feedback from other people, right? You can see if somebody has a comment about your work that doesn't match up with your own assessment of your work, then hopefully, if we're being mindful in that moment, then we can take off those hypercritical glasses, put on that other person's glasses, and have more compassion for our work and see it from a totally different perspective and realize that you know, there is no single judgment call. This is good. This is bad. It's all different people's perspectives. And maybe your own, in that case, my own perspective was really, really limited.
Yeah, that's why I always encourage my students to share their artwork at the classes, because even if people do the same exercises, the outcome is so different, because everybody has their own signature. Even if you know, I always try to create that kind of exercises that your signature will come out, and it's so inspiring to see different personalities and different people sharing their work.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm such a huge proponent in the power of sharing work, and even before we feel ready to share it, because specifically for that reason, because it enables you to see your work from other people's perspective through their glasses instead of your own. And that's such an enlightening, you know, eye-opening, liberating experience. So I'm a big believer in that.
Yeah. But also it helps if you develop and study all the things that are connected with art. And if you grow your imagination and you study the art theories and such, you will learn to be your own critic. And I think that was the biggest thing for me in studying design, was that I was able to, you know, more see my work more in the other eyes, and that way have more self-acceptance.
Yeah.
And right kind of criticism. We can always improve, but there's no reason of questioning it all. And one thing I teach for my students is that every little thing that you do can be part of the process. And if you focus on the process, you will see that when you get, you will create enough ugly things and then put them together, they will look absolutely wonderful. And so if you just concentrate on one ugly line, it will always look like that. But if you do several of those, they will become interesting.
Isn't that the truth? Absolutely. Yeah. Yes. I want to go back to, you had mentioned a time where you were not painting. Was that a period for you when you felt creatively blocked? And what I'm interested in is, if there was a time where you felt creatively blocked, how did you get back? How did you get back to your creative joy?
Yeah, that time when I was studying in the University of Technology, that was also the time when my mother had died just recently. And I was a young girl and I was studying. I didn't have much money and my mother was very close to me. And I think it also has something to do with why I stopped drawing and why I felt that I wasn't sort of experienced enough. I had just experienced a great loss. And for me, when I've been blocked, music has been a really big help for me. Even if I don't play anything at the moment myself, I used to play violin when I was a teenager and don't sing much. But and actually, I don't even listen to music a lot. But in the certain times when I have had crisis, almost every time music has had something to do to solve that. So when my mother had passed away and I had studied in the University of Technology and then went to IT business, and then suddenly, when me and my husband were driving back home one day from work, I heard this hip-hop song, which has had a catchy melody like they all have. But this song, I usually see music in colors. I think it's connected with being a visual person somehow. And I saw these blacks and whites in this music, and I had especially a lot of difficulties using black and white even in my crafts. And I suddenly realized that losses are part of life. And, you know, I had gone through that intellectually a lot of times, that this happens, everybody loses somebody, and there's a lot of grief in life in general, and that I'm not an exception and such. But that song made me understand that in emotional level too. And I think that that's what art can really do, and why we need art, whether it's music or visual arts or anything. It's because we can understand things emotionally. And another time, which was only a few weeks, which lasted only a few weeks, was that when I had a big frustration in my previous day job a few years ago. I had a task that I didn't like and that I felt that weren't not using my full potential. And I got a bit depressed and felt it really difficult to start painting or drawing anything. And again, it was a song that made me recover. And this song, it was more than the atmosphere or the melody, it was the lyrics. And it was a Finnish song, and it said things like that, if you feel that the everybody in the world is wrong, it's time to demand more of yourself and move to the next level. And it also said that that there's a paradise in the desert of your mind, and you just have to find it. And I still feel that's really inspirational. If you think of your mind being a desert, and that there is a paradise if you just start searching. And I think that's just, I don't, at the moment, I don't need much else to think about to find the passion to start creating. And I think that tells us that we need a certain safe place where we can open up ourselves to art, to keep on creating. We need to stop, and we need to nurture ourselves by taking the time, and so that we can get by all those negative emotions and start searching for the paradise.
Yeah. Absolutely. Amen to that. So it sounds like, Pavi, that you are still doing design work, and at the same time you're also teaching art. Is that correct? And you're doing the industrial design on commission, kind of?
No, I'm actually doing a custom artwork, and I also create custom craft designs and such. I've actually not done any industrial design after I graduated, because my specialty in industrial design, in the traditional industrial design, because my specialty in industrial design, in the field of industrial design, is service design. So after I graduated, I was a service designer a few years. And so I was developing services with design methods. Mm. And I was connected with usability issues and, user experiences and developing those. So at the moment, it's beneficial for what I do to understand about usability and user experience and that.
Yeah, I was thinking
stuff.
That must come in very handy as somebody who creates and teaches classes online.
Yes.
So where can people find you online?
You can find me at www.pnmparakeet.com, and you can remember PNM Parakeet so that I have a garden with a lot of peonies. That's my favorite flower. And when I talk about being brave, I think that peonies are one of the bravest flowers. You know, Finnish summer is very short, and every spring they start this race when they have to, you know, grow these huge flowers within a couple of months. And I think that's so brave. I admire every phase they go through in that journey. And I have I have 10 peonies at the moment. I'm planning more. And parakeet comes from birds. I admire birds too because they can fly, and I think that flying is something that is highly connected to creativity. And I also have pet birds. I have 4 little parakeets, Pudgies, and they actually fly in my library room when I create art.
That's great.
And the way they sing and fly when I create art, it's very liberating to watch them.
That is such a great visual. I'm just imagining you. I had a parakeet when I was a kid, and I'm just imagining you in your art space with your birds flying and chirping. I love that. Well, it's been a pleasure talking with you, Pavi. We've talked about some really interesting things here, and I really enjoy getting to connect with you. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you a lot. And I also hope that all of the people who listen to you, that if you are dreaming about building your dream job, then try to embrace everything that you already know and have, because that gives you the confidence to build up new skills. And I think it's great that there are more and more creative entrepreneurs, and I hope to connect with you all, and welcome to visit my website. And thank you Melissa.
Thank you. That's it. That's a wrap. Thank you so much for joining me today. I hope you enjoyed that interview, that conversation with Pavi Eerola. If you're getting value out of this podcast, as always, the best way to thank me is to tell your friends and hop on over to iTunes and leave a rating and review. I would be so profoundly grateful if you would do that. And tomorrow, Thursday, December 8th, come join me for a free creativity workshop, Born to Create, Why Your Creative Play is Essential, Not Self-Indulgent. If you have a hard time getting yourself to do the creative things that you most love to be doing, this workshop is for you. You will learn the surprising truth about why you feel resistance to the thing you love to do. You will learn how to make every creative block your friend. I'm not kidding. And you will learn the unexpected science of how creative play affects the brain. You will never look at it the same way again. It's about 90 minutes. It's free. And yes, there will be a replay for a limited time, but the link will only go to people who register. So go do that at freecreativityworkshop.com. That's freecreativityworkshop.com. And I hope to see you there. Go get creating. Mwah!
Live creative now. Live creative now.
Subscribe at livecreativenow.com.